Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
Food and travel. They go hand in hand. And chances are, if you're a fan of Heritage Radio Network, you love them both. Between April 10th and 24th, we have six incredible food and travel experiences up for auction at charitybuzz.com. Go on an underground food tour of New Orleans with a rocket scientist. Get your hands on VIP passes to Feast Portland, or enjoy a ranch-to-table experience in wine country. Four of the experiences include hotel stays at some of the most iconic properties across the country, including the newly reopened Hotel Claremont in Atlanta. Now's your chance to win the ultimate Bourbon and Beyond weekend in Lexington, or take in a Latin food tour of New York's outer boroughs. You'll eat, drink, explore, and relax, all while supporting Heritage Radio Network. Help us keep the lights on and the mics hot. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/auction and bid now.
You're listening to Meant to be Eaten on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Coral Lee. Josie Baker, yes, that is his real last name, is the founder of Josie Baker Bread, which cranks out 400 loaves a day, 360 days a year out of the mill in San Francisco. Today, we'll be talking about the history, current aesthetic, and feasibility in a gluten-free world of naturally leavened breads in America. Thanks so much for joining me, Josie.
Thank you very much for having me, Coral.
So how did naturally leavened breads travel from Europe to America? Or rather, how did they adapt when traveling?
Well, that's a big question there. I think current American bread has its origins in European bread. Primarily, we draw on French traditions, but also some Italian, as well as some Eastern European baking practices. Mm-hmm. 1 second here.
So when we think of like the artisanal...
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I think one thing that I'm really excited about that we're doing is that we are taking these traditions and, blending and evolving them into ways that haven't been done before, where we're drawing on practices that, have been done for hundreds and hundreds of years, but we're also, we're picking and choosing and combining them in ways that, in my opinion, is yielding some of the most delicious bread that probably has ever been made on the planet, which is pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was just about to say, so with this blending of all these different traditions, is the artisanal country loaf that we see in so many restaurants today, is that a uniquely American thing, or is that something that we can find in France or in Italy?
Well, I think in broad strokes, that's really has its origins in French bread. French bread or pain au levain is a traditional French style that primarily a white flour bread that has a small amount of whole grain and traditionally is made for sourdough culture. But I think what we're seeing now in some artisan bakeries is a incorporation of, of high quality fresh whole grain flour in proportions that really hasn't been done before. If we're talking about quote unquote country bread.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we have this. Or we did used to have this kind of preference of white bread. I'm thinking of like how bread changed during the Industrial Revolution. And so how are we doing another flip? Are we preferring whole grains again?
Well, it remains to be seen. I mean, I think what one thing that's become really clear is that lots of people have issues with bread, quote unquote, bread. And the reason why I say quote unquote is because, you know, the loaves that are being made today, you know, the majority of bread that's made in America today is not, it's not even really made by people. You know, it's made by machines. And it's made to be able to, you know, be shipped around the country and then sit on a supermarket shelf for, you know, days, not weeks, and basically remain unchanged. I mean, it's you know, it's a product that's made with ingredients that have been leached of all of their alive properties. And not to mention, then other ingredients are added that further remove it from, I think, the category that we really think of when we think of bread. So,
No, I totally agree.
I think that is more the question that I'm interested in, as far as like what are people responding negatively to? Because saying that people are responding negatively, or that people can't eat or have allergies to bread, you know, when you compare this factory-made object with a loaf of artisan bread that's made with high-quality ingredients and, you know, it's paid attention to along the course of its lifespan, you compare the two products, and they're totally different. Mm-hmm. And I think while lots of people have problems with the former, I think the truth of it is that most people in America haven't yet been fortunate enough to have the latter. But I think those who have quickly realize that actually they don't have any problems with that kind of bread. And, that's something that over time will just get sorted out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, we are calling these two very different things by the same name. And so how does our experience with Wonder Bread kind of affect our expectations or standards or a taste for bread in general?
Well, it's another very complicated question. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that, you know, a loaf of Wonder Bread is very cheap. You know, and that's because it is part of a larger system that has been built with really the primary goal to, you know, drop the price of the loaf while also maximizing the profitability. And so, you know, quality, freshness, nutrition, integrity, I mean, those things aren't really values or priorities that are factored into the creation of that loaf. It is very affordable, but you know, you compare that to a loaf of bread that has actually been taken care of from very beginning to very end. There's no way around it. And not to mention, you know, made with high quality ingredients that similarly require care and attention to be paid, throughout their lifespan. It's just it's going to cost more money to make something like that. And, you know, I think the truth of it is not that artisan bread is expensive, it's that factory made mass produced bread is too cheap. Mm-hmm. But it ties into a much larger complicated question and conversation about, you know, what is the true cost of food and what are the values of our culture and of you know, the individuals within our culture and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that the vast majority of people, if given the choice between access to both products, I can't imagine that very many people would pick the, you know, the styrofoam mm-hmm. over the bread.
Maybe from like a nostalgic standpoint, but I was actually asking.
Hey, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll eat a fluffernutter on Wonder Bread with the best of them. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Right. So on the heels of that, what is the mission of New American Bread? What does it look like? How is it going to be very different?
Well, I think that it's a balance of what is the norm right now, which is very affordable. It's very durable. It is travels well, but the quality of it and the nutrition of it are, and the traceability, the transparency, is really missing from that. As is, you know, any information about the process or the people who actually went into its creation or the growing of the ingredients. You know, I mean, a loaf of factory-made industrial bread on a supermarket shelf, it's basically anonymous. You know, there's no way that we know anything about where the wheat was grown that went into its loaf, nor, you know, any of the individuals involved in its creation. So I think the New American Bread does have that that traceability and that transparency to the origins of the loaf. And it also, you know, it allows the eater to experience the story of the ingredients, right? You can actually experience where this bread came from, right? Everywhere from, you know, the farmer that grew the grain to the miller that milled it into flour to the baker who mixed it into dough and baked it into bread. And I do believe that a key piece of that loaf is the whole grain nature of it. Now, I'm not super dogmatic about it. I don't think every single loaf, you know, that is made has to be 100% whole grain. In my bakery, there's a whole bunch of bread that we make that's just mostly whole grain. And I think there's obviously a place for bread that's made completely with white flour, right? That's just, it's a matter of the relative roles that these foods play in our diet, mm-hmm. right? We're not going to eat three sandwiches a day. We're not going to eat three sandwiches a day, period, let alone, you know, if you are going to eat three sandwiches a day, and you want to have a healthy diet, you better hope they're not on, you know, white as snow Wonder Bread. So I think those are the key pieces of it, really, that it's, I think as far as the locality of it, you know, not everywhere has the right climate and conditions for growing grain. And I don't think we need to shoehorn, you know, everywhere to be that kind of place, right? And so I think grain, in order to think of a local loaf, I think you really need to think regionally, because, you know, like in California, we're kind of lucky, right? We have a humongous state. And so saying that something is grown in California, it could be many hundreds of miles away from wherever you are, but it still counts as, you know, local California. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, other states, different parts of the country and different size states, you know, they don't have that luxury. And, you know, I'm searching for the simplest rules to follow, but not to oversimplify things.
Mm-hmm. And so does San Franciscan bread differ at all from New American bread? Or why do we see that so many of these good or amazing, inspiring bakeries are coming out of San Francisco or from San Franciscan-based bakers?
Well, San Francisco has a rich history of bread, and particularly sourdough. And, you know, San Francisco sourdough is a style of bread unto its own. Many people mistakenly believe that sourdough bread has its origins in San Francisco, which is, I'm sorry to report, not actually the case. But, you know, as legend would have it, the gold miners who came out, you know, a couple hundred years ago with their sourdough starters in little pouches, you know, around their necks. You know, a sourdough starter is a really useful way to make incredibly cheap, healthy food, right? Because of the pre-digestion that is accomplished with the sourdough yeast and bacteria. You know, I think that even a couple of centuries ago, people had a physiological and intuitive sense that it was something they should do. You know, they should inoculate their mixture of flour and water with their sourdough culture because really it makes them feel better, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we try to find that balance of, obviously we want to make food that appeals to our taste buds, but it also needs to make us feel good upon eating it. And, you know, I think that balance of consciousness that we have in the Bay Area, which is in no small part due to the lovely climate here that is really lends itself so easily to growing year-round, practically. We have this bounty of different plants and animals, and we have an awareness about the nutrition and the health implications of all of our foods. And I think we are finding a really nice balance of incredibly delicious bread that is, you know, made in the most nutritious way possible. It's also, you know, the density here in the Bay Area, and the economy out here, you know, lots of people value the time, energy, money that goes into making a, you know, a beautiful, delicious, nutritious loaf. And so there really is, there's a big demand for that, and there's the resources to back it up.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a difficult thing to enjoy, though, which I think we'll get to later in our conversation about how bakeries can better serve their communities. Because I don't know, I just feel like it's easy for us to say, oh, you know, we love the amount of time that it takes to put into one loaf, which might be like a few days, but some people don't have, you know, the time or the effort or the energy to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is a very nuanced, complicated conversation that, you know, gets into all sorts of questions of politics and cultural values. And, you know, I mean, and it's a difficult nut that I make no claims to have cracked about, but, you know, like the fact that, you know, making bread in this style is not affordable to everybody. Right. And so how do we do our part to be aware of that, but also to make decisions that, you know, satisfy the craftsperson in us, but also like satisfies the neighbor and the humanitarian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that gets to larger practices about how one runs their business, and, you know, the fact that, you know, we sell our loaves for, you know, $7. I know that's unaffordable for some people. And, you know, we do other things in order to try to be, you know, good Samaritans and contributing members of society. You know, we donate hundreds of loaves a week to local food banks and homeless shelters. And, you know, that's one way that we try to do our part to, you know, be responsible members of a community.
Mm-hmm. This is Meant to Be Eaten. I'm speaking with Josie Baker of Josie Baker Bread. We'll be right back after a short break.
Change is coming around the bend. Shotgun wedding and a story penned.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group, or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market. Whatever makes you whole.
Oh, go shatter me, sweep me up into your hands.
We're back. I'm speaking with Josie Baker of Josie Baker Bread, and we were just talking about how sourdough is kind of misunderstood to have originated in San Francisco. But in that same vein, as sourdough is kind of this emblem of San Francisco, how has the dark crust, open airy crumb, tartine style loaf become the emblem of sourdough bread?
How has tartine style bread become the emblem?
Right. Why is it that when we think of sourdough bread, that's kind of the go-to image we have of it?
Well, I think something that Chad did at Tartine, which I'm extremely grateful for, and I'm a huge fan of him and all the bakers there, the work that they do. They did sort of define a standard with the tartine loaf, which you know Chad shared with the world so generously through his book, Tartine Bread. It was really an exercise in extremes that was kind of outside of what most almost anybody else was doing at that time, or maybe anybody else was doing at that time, at least here in America, you know, with the boldness of the crust and the creamy openness of the interior of the bread. It was really, you know, the first time I think anybody has that bread, they're really struck by that variety and the spectrum that they create in those breads. And, you know, he put out a remarkably beautiful book that shared the process and a lot of the products with the general public. And, you know, I think it very much defines a generation of bread bakers, you know, who saw that book, saw what was possible, became head over heels in love, and, you know, started baking all the time. And so I feel really fortunate to have been so close to that bakery and to that bread. And yeah, I mean, it's a thing of beauty.
I guess we should place this in context. So pre dark crust, creamy open crumb. What was kind of the aesthetic of bread? Was it like softer crust, maybe not baked as darker? What did people kind of like to go for?
Yeah, I mean, the tartine loaf was baked considerably darker than most breads, at least here in the States. I mean, I think that I believe that Chad, you know, learned the ways and evolved them in his own way, but from, you know, from other bakers around the world. I think there's a handful of bakers in France that he was really inspired by. He worked some with Dave Miller, which is another amazing bread baker here in the States, just a few hours outside of San Francisco. It's much more extreme than, you know, your standard artisan loaf of bread. The amount of water in the finished loaf, but also in the bread dough, was much higher than what most people were used to. And the result of that is a more open crumb, right? Bigger holes in the bread, but also just a more supple interior. Hmm. Which both of those things require walking a razor's edge. You push the bread, you bake the bread just a little bit too much, and all of a sudden it's all burnt, which lots of people think that it's burnt if they've never had that kind of bread before. And, it isn't until they taste it that they realize that it's actually not. Well, there's small sections of the crust that's burnt, but most of it is not actually burnt. And it actually provides a really amazing variety of textures and flavors. I mean, less water in the dough means that the crumb, you know, the holes in the bread are smaller and more regular, and bread doesn't keep as long, and it's not as supple.
Yeah, very much the razor's edge. I'm learning how to bake bread on my own, and I baked on a rainy day where it was a bit humid, and I added a bit more water in the dough. And I just came out with all these weird puddle-looking loaves because I just didn't know how to handle it properly. So
yeah, it's really that'll hard. Happen. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is you add water to the dough because it gives you the potential to achieve this greater texture differential between the outside and the inside, and, you know, bigger holes. But it is also, it's easier to screw up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I got like a focaccia style loaf.
I've been there.
Just totally
I've been
flat.
There.
So then the thing is, tartine is pushing to extremes the way they bake, with high hydration, baking it really dark, but also the dough is primarily, right, it's like a white flour. And so why do you think there is this, it's like, is it just easier to produce, or is it better received that the bread is just white flour? Is it harder to produce whole grain loaves consistently? Why is the white bread still receiving all the kind of popularity and success?
Yeah. Well, I can't really speak to, you know, exactly what kind of flours they use, or, you know, why they do it the way that they do it. I can talk about why I do what I do, if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, we mostly use whole grain flour, and all of the whole grain flour that we use in our bakery, we mill ourselves fresh. And the reason that we mill it fresh is because whole grain flour has a shelf life. And, you know, basically, once you mill it, it's only going to get worse after you mill it, right? You expose the fragile insides to oxidation, and eventually things go rancid. And so, I believe that if you want to use a lot of whole grain flour, the freshest way to get that flour is to mill it yourself. And, I very much don't think that every bakery needs a mill in it, nor does every baker every home baker need a mill at home. I mean, there's more and more options, both for home bakers and professional bakeries, to obtain fresh, high-quality whole grain flour. You know, us having a mill in our bakery was really a desire to get as deep into the process as possible and to use flour that was as fresh as possible. And I'm really intrigued with the idea of encouraging, kind of like getting out of the way of our ingredients as much as possible. So with any given, you know, harvest from a farm, you know, to take those grains and to kind of do as little to them as possible, transforming them into the finished product of bread, of course, is probably what I'm most interested in. And in order to do that, you have to leave the grain whole, right? So you need whole grain flour, and you've got to mill it fresh. And so it definitely is, it's harder, because, you know, the craft, milling is a craft, right? And I definitely did not have a full appreciation for how, one second here. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I definitely didn't have an appreciation for how nuanced and complicated the craft was when we first started out, and as a result of that, the quality of our bread definitely suffered when we first started milling, because I didn't know how to source the grains properly, nor did we really know how to mill them, nor did we really know how to work with fresh milled whole grain flour. Hmm. So that makes three strikes right there. So over the years, we've learned a few things along the way, and now have a much more nuanced appreciation for the things that we need to pay attention to, you know, in doing, you know, this craft the way that we've chosen to. And so, you know, we take great pains to find harvests from farms of, you know, varieties that perform well in our bakery with our process, just like we take great pains to make sure that we are milling the grains properly, so on and so forth. You know, the mixing of the maintenance of our sourdough starter, the mixing of our dough, the shaping of our loaves, and finally the baking of the loaves. So it's really just expanding our reach in the process from beyond, you know, taking flour to finished loaf. We take the grain to the flour to the finished loaf.
Right. So you were saying milling your own whole grains is very difficult, and it definitely makes storage a lot more difficult. But how is it difficult in the baking process? Like, how does whole grain flour react to water or other ingredients differently than white flour?
Well, there's a few simple rules, but then also a few caveats that really complicate things. I mean, if we're going to make some general principles about, because I'll say this. Whole grain flour is white flour, right? Which is the white flour is the part that makes a sticky, stretchy dough, right? You form gluten, which is the stretchy part of dough, from the components of white flour. But then you also, in whole grain flour, you have germ and bran. Germ and bran don't play any role in the structure of the bread dough or the finished loaf, other than to, if we're just talking structurally, it just weighs it down, mm-hmm. right? Because it's like throwing a bunch of very delicious, nutritious little pebbles into your bread dough.
Right.
So that is true about all whole grain dough. So depending on what your parameters are, what your goal is, you're not going to have as voluminous of a loaf of, you know, if you use the same amount of whole grain flour to the same amount of white flour, because it has the bran and the germinate, which don't contribute to the overall volume. Whole grain flour typically soaks up a good deal more water than white flour. And now that obviously is complicated by the grind of the flour and the freshness of the flour and the particular variety, harvest, farming practices, etc. All those things impact absorption. So it's not a hard and fast rule, but, you know, as a rule of thumb, you could say, you know, generally whole grain flours soak up between 10 and 20% more water than white flours. And now, again, there's actually a really broad spectrum. I've worked with some whole grain flours that soaked up literally twice as much water as white flours. And I've worked with some whole grain flours that soaked up less than a comparable white flour. So there are plenty of exceptions to that rule. Another rule of thumb, which this one by and large holds, is that whole grain flour ferments quicker than refined flours, and that's the simple reason is that the yeast and bacteria that are feasting on the flours appreciate the nutrients of whole grain flour, just like our body appreciates those added nutrients of whole grain flour. So, you know, as a rule of thumb, whole grain flour soaks up more water and ferments faster. But because of the first idea I conveyed, that it's got all this bran and germ, which is not contributing anything meaningful to the structure, you end up with a more fragile dough. And so what that means is that the margin of error shrinks. And what does that mean? It means it's really easy to end up with a puddle that doesn't turn into a very pretty loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. But I think for most people, it's actually not so much that it's more difficult. It's actually just that it behaves differently, and it's not what they're used to. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, you know, people are going to make bread that isn't as good as it can be, and they're going to think it's because either because whole grain bread sucks or because they suck as a baker, but neither is true. It's just you got to learn how to interact with each ingredient, and, you know, listen closely to what it has to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Whole Foods by my house has been out of half-white farmer ground bread flour for the past few weeks, and I always, every Sunday, I go and I run to the bread flour aisle, and someone is buying all of them. My boyfriend is so confused as to why I'm so upset with the whole wheat. I'm just like, you don't understand how much harder it is. It's just so hard. But yeah, so with this, with the whole grain being harder to manage, I mean, this totally contributes or brings us back to our conversation of why this bread costs so much more. And so when these breads are costing like $7 or $10, how and why should people that usually pay $4, even $1 for bread, buy these new loaves?
Well, you know, ultimately that's for every individual to decide what is of value to them. You know, I can't make any claims about what people should or shouldn't value. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that the most I could do is for, really is for, to just encourage people to think about, you know, where, whatever bread you're eating, where did it come from and what's in it, right? Because, you know, most bread that's made in this country, really the answer to both of those questions is, I don't know. We don't know where it came from, and we don't actually know what's in it, because even if you read the ingredient label, you don't know what half of that shit is. Because mm-hmm. it's long. Oh, can I swear on the air?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
It's a bunch of other stuff that's been put into bread. That's definitely not flour, water, and salt, right? it's all sorts of stuff that has to do with really the economics of, you know, the mass production of industrial food. And, you know, that's why those ingredients are in there. They're not to make the bread more healthy. Well, maybe that be able to say, to be able to claim that it's more healthy. But, you know, and so, again, I think everybody has to make that decision for themselves. But, you know, it's up to whether or not people prioritize and value knowing those vital details of things that they're putting in their body, right? And also, obviously, you have to decide based on how good something tastes. You know, I mean, I'm very much not arguing for people to make decisions solely based on, you know, on the story behind a loaf of bread. I mean, it has to obviously taste good. And I think, again, for most people, if you take a loaf of well-made artisan bread and compare it to something that you buy in the supermarket, there's not really much of a comparison. You know, I mean, the stuff that's made with care, it's just better. It's better on all levels. And yes, it costs a little more, and it's a matter of whether or not, you know, that's something that you value or not. And there's no, you know, I don't make any value judgments. There's plenty of ways to, you know, cast our votes. And, you know, I don't think that everybody needs to vote with, you know, the loaf that they buy. But
yeah, is there a way that bakers or bakeries can better support the communities that they're feeding? Is there a way to, you know, make these breads more accessible?
You know, I mean, so one of the things that we do is we offer classes for people to teach people how to bake their own bread. I mean, it's obviously, you know, buying flour versus buying bread, flour is much cheaper mm-hmm. than bread. And so if you, you know, if you don't want to pay for somebody else to go through the trouble of making it, but you do want it to be made out of, you know, quality ingredients that you actually know where they're coming from. I mean, the only real way to make sure that you know what's in the loaf of bread is to make it yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we host multiple classes a week for home bakers where they come into the bakery and we basically tell them all the secrets for how we do our thing. And you know, the truth of it is it takes a lot of time, and it's not that difficult. But you definitely have to be interested in it in order for the bread to turn out any good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if people are interested in getting into it, then we obviously are happy to share that understanding. So, you know, that's one way that we, you know, participate in that way. I think, you know, we donate a lot to... mostly to lots of local schools, but other, you know, arts organizations, nonprofits. And we, let's see. Do you have any ideas?
No, I mean, these are all great. I think the classes is like...
One thing I've toyed with for a little while is actually making, just making a smaller loaf that would be... It would have a lower price point mm-hmm. in order for, you know, for it to be more affordable. I mean, we sell these really little loaves of bread filled with cheese, and they're, you know, $4. Mm-hmm. But most of our loaves, which are like between a pound and a half and 2 pounds, those sell for between $7 and $7.50. But I think the truth is that for some people it's too expensive, but for some people it's also just too much bread. And so, you know, the possibility of making a smaller loaf that is a little bit more affordable is something that I've actually been toying with really recently, specifically in order to lower the price point, to make our bread accessible to a greater portion of the population.
Mm-hmm. That actually kind of reminds me of, like, the cheese scrap section at artisanal cheese shops. where you'll have this cheese that's like $80 a pound, but then you'll have a little bit and it's like 50 cents. And you're like, yeah, I got to try it anyway. So I think like the tiny breads thing totally works.
Okay, well, thank you.
This has been Meant to be Eaten. I'm Coral Lee. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.